Today, the real estate carry trade is a Death Star. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Today, I'm joined again by John Wright from the University of Technology in Sydney. John, hello. Nice to have you back on the show.
Well, Martin, yes, thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm very grateful for the time that you can allocate to me.
Well, thanks for coming back on. We had a conversation a few weeks ago, and we talked about the real estate carry trade. And I must tell you that that show created a real lot of interest from a lot of people. Although they did say, hey, you were a bit rambly and, you know, it was a bit difficult to follow the theme. So what we're going to try and do is to take the conversation further, because I think this is a really critical conversation to have, particularly now, particularly with the real estate where it is. And what you've uncovered through your recent book is that there's a set of issues bubbling below the surface, which if they explode, well, it could be quite diabolical for Australia.
Yes, very much so. And I don't take that at all lightly. It's something that we need to be extremely concerned about, but it's also something we need to be aware of. And I don't think many people are aware of this danger. So let's see if I can ramble less and be a bit more direct. This is, I am from a University of Technology, so I'm supposed to generate research impact.
Well, I'm afraid that I'm a philosopher by training, and I tend to like to go off and ramble down recent little corridors and byways. And we did that a little bit last time, and it was a really interesting conversation from my perspective. But let's try and think about what are the potential, if this carry trades conversation, and we should re-explain what carry trade is in a second, but if that carry trade conversation is accurate, then what are the implications for Australians and for the economy, and particularly for housing? Because those are the big questions, aren't they?
Very much so, yeah. So, yeah, what I wanted to really drill down into today is like how the system works. And I kind of want to get across that this is not an alternative analysis. The alternative analysis is already out there on other podcasts. I want to talk about how this works and how it's upheld and presented to the public, and how vulnerable it actually is. The Australian housing sector, I don't think, is not as strong as people believe. And we're in a situation, I think, where that a mistake that has been made that's been exacerbated by political incompetence and inaction. So we have a highly precarious housing sector hanging over our heads. And I don't think anyone really believes in it anymore. It can't really be reformed along the lines that the government thinks it can, or that most economists think it can. And anyone who thinks that it can be reformed that way, I would argue, doesn't understand how it works. And so I think reform is going to have to come from forums like this, like your sort of DFA, DFA audience. Like Steve Bannon has his war room posse. Well, you have your sort of DFA posse. And reform is going to have to bubble up through forums like this one, because the politicians are not going to, they're not even going to like this analysis, but they must be forced into action. And it's only through forums like this that I think that potentially there's a chance to salvage something.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really important point. And again, because this sort of story is not one that politicians find very comfortable, and to an extent actually would say, we don't want to discover it. We've got to actually use other mechanisms. And, what I try to do on this channel is to put some of this stuff out there so people can understand what's really going on.
Yeah. You have your posse. Bannon puts his posse into action for other reasons, but let's try and do some good with your posse.
Okay, let's circle the horses and get going then.
Okay. All right, so I've got some slides, and what I want to do to start with is I want to address why I'm going to tell what I'm going to tell you in this presentation, why it's going to be different from most other stories that you've heard that's out there. So what I'm going to tell you today is going to look very different. Yeah. And I kind of need to address this. I am going to begin with one question. And that question is, how does it work? Now, I can't really tell good jokes like Biko. I watched Biko. I can't compete with him, but I can tell stories. So I'm going to give you a story to start with. This is why my analysis looks different. So let's start with Oscar Piastri here. So let's imagine Oscar Piastri comes off the course at Monaco. I'm his pit boss. Oscar comes to me and he says, "Look, John, Verstappen is 5 seconds ahead of me. I can't get past this guy. There's nothing I seem to be able to do in this car. I can't get round him. I beat him earlier in the year, but I need to do something. I think there's something wrong with the car." And so I say, "Oh, well, okay, Oscar, I'll take a look." So what happens is it begins with a discussion of how does the F1 McLaren work? Piastri's 5 seconds behind. We've got to get him in front of Verstappen. How does it work? How does the car work? So we have a look at it. We gather around. I talk to him in pit lane and I say, "Look, do you think you're losing with the brakes, or are you losing with the acceleration, or is it the steering, or where do you think the problem is?" And we'll have a discussion. Now, what I want to say is that most people don't begin here. The reason I begin here is because I'm essentially a philosopher. I was very interested in the work of John Dewey as a postgrad. And John Dewey is an American philosopher of the New Deal era. This is the only thing I'll say about philosophy for the entire talk, Martin. Dewey believes that the most philosophical instrument in the human body is this, the hand. This is more philosophical than the brain, he says. And what he means by that is, so imagine you go down to JB Hi-Fi, you buy a new flat screen, you bring it home, you unpack it, you get the remote out of the box. What do you do? Do you read the instructions first? No, you just start playing with it. You play with it. Oh, this does this, that does the other. And maybe I'll go and look at the instructions if I have to. But mostly, I'll use this, the hand. The hand is more philosophical than the mind. So I was always attracted to that. So there's no money in philosophy. So I went to the ANU and did a postdoc there, and I worked in John Braithwaite's one of Australia's best scholars, John Braithwaite's Regulatory Governance School. So the question there was, how does the government regulate nursing homes? How does it regulate taxation? How does it regulate gaming and casinos? How does it regulate hospitals? The central question of that program was, how does it work? How does the regulatory system work? Which is what the pit crew were doing in with Oscar's car. Most people don't do this who talk about the Australian housing sector. They begin from here. I'll just see if I can. Yeah, they begin from here. Most of them are economists, and an economist doesn't ask how it works. An economist begins with a statement. It's all about supply and demand, and you cannot begin an analysis of basically anything, I don't think, asking that question, especially not the Australian housing sector, because supply and demand, as we'll see, has absolutely nothing to do with the way that the McLaren works. So they begin from an abstract position. So it's like they're not even going to talk to Piastri. They're not even going to ask him any. He's going to come and say, "Well, there's something wrong with the McLaren." And they're going to say, "Well, you see, Oscar, it's all about this abstract rule that I have." And they'll present you charts and dot plots and tables. This is what an economist will present you. My slides don't look like that. My slides will look different because I'm talking about how it works. How does the Australian housing sector work? If you are an economist, you're kind of at an immediate disadvantage when it comes to understanding the Australian housing sector, because you're going to begin here. That's what you're trained to do. That's what first years are getting ready for their exams now at universities all around the country. They've been taught to begin with this. That's not how you need to begin when you look at the Australian housing sector. For the economists in the room, it's not a completely useless discipline. There are some very, very good economists who begin differently. So the way that I study the housing sector is probably closest to Australia's best economists, Australia's most sort of unknown economists. That's Bill Mitchell at the University of Newcastle. Now, he's associated with modern monetary theory. People will tell you that modern monetary theory is that you shouldn't really play with it because it tells you that deficits don't matter. They tell you that. They don't understand modern monetary theory. The central question of modern monetary theory is not far removed from mine. It's how does it work? So Bill Mitchell's question, and there he is with Warren Mosler, their latest book, how does fiat currency work within a system of floating exchange? That's what modern monetary theory is. It's a question of how does the currency system work? I'm asking the same thing, not because I'm an economist or an unconventional economist, but because I'm a philosopher who was trained at Braithwaite's Regulatory Governance School. So that's what I'm doing. So it's going to look very different to what we'll see on other podcasts. So what I'm saying to you is that most people who look at the Australian housing sector are economists. And they're not beginning from the same place, so they miss it. So this will be news to them as much as it'll seem different to all of you. So how does it work? How does the Australian housing sector work? So what I want to get at, what I also want to explain is that this is a machine, this thing. This housing sector is a machine, and it's comprised of important parts that work together to make the system operate. And to some extent, we're all sort of as Nick Cave says in his famous song, we're all sort of microscopic cogs in this sort of catastrophic plan that's been lumbered upon us. So I say the Australian housing sector works like a carry trade. So what's a carry trade? Well, a carry trade is a leveraged investment in an asset class that yields a higher rate of return than the cost of the leverage. So what does that mean in English? So there are two important parts to the carry trade, the real estate carry trade, that's totally unique to Australia. No one's ever done this before. It's only us. One is the real estate auction. That's the most important part of it. The other one is the rental market. So what you do in the Australian housing sector, you go to the auction and you buy that property, and it doesn't matter what price you get it at. That doesn't matter. Then you carry it to the rental market. And these poor souls here, you give it to them, and you put them in it, and you rent it out, and you hold it for a year. So there are four characteristics of a carry trade. All carry trades work the exact same way. There are four characteristics. Here are three of them: leverage, which is the capacity to borrow. Two is spread, which is so the spread is the difference between the sale price and the purchase price. And three is your carry. And that's different upon every carry trade. So you go you to the real estate auction, you buy, and the purchase price must be less, it must be less than the sale price eventually. It doesn't matter how much it is you buy it for, it just must the sale price just must be bigger. Then you take it to the rental market, you plonk it down, and these poor souls will have to rent it. And your carry, that's the money you make. So you get reduced income tax burden via negative gearing. You write down the costs of your leverage against, you know, if you can't make it up through the rent, you write that down, you reduce your taxable income, and you get a capital gain to the capital gains tax discount when you sell it. And that's how it works. There is one other factor that is essential to it, and that is volatility. So at the top of the screen here, this is the carry trader must believe this. So you are short volatility. That means you don't want anything to change. So when what's her name? The housing minister. I always forget her name.
Claire O'Neill.
O'Neill, Claire O'Neill. When she says, and Alan Kohler says this too on the Financial Times guy. He says he doesn't want house prices to go up dramatically. He just wants them to rise steadily. Well, so do the carry. That's what you want if you're a carry trader. You don't want massive gains. You just want it to go up steadily. Your short volatility. Why? Because you might need to get out. You might need to sell this. So you've got to hold it for a year to get your capital gains tax discount. But you've borrowed money for 30 years to buy that house. So something could happen. You know, who knows what Trump or Bannon's going to do next? You might need to get out. So you just need slow and steady gains. You need to get out. And the way that you get out is through the auction. And that's why the auction is so crucial. So that's how the Australian system works. Now, to make this work, to make this really work well, what you need at the auction is you need a frenzy at the auction. So the carry trader doesn't care at what price that he or she buys the house, but the sale price just has to be higher. So you need a frenzy. You need lots of people at the auction bidding for this to drive the price higher and higher and higher and higher. Because that way, other carry traders who are getting nervous can get out. Once the price stops going up at the auction, carry trade starts to wobble. That's volatile. That's things look like they could change. So this is why you see, you turn on Channel 9 News tomorrow night and you'll get, just before the sports report, something that they give nowhere else in the world, which is like a live, a television update on network news about the auction clearance rate. It's weird. You don't get that anywhere else in the world. Why? Because the auction is so important. If the auction fails to work, the carry trade risks unwinding because you've got to have these four things in place to make the trade work. So if the auction doesn't deliver a higher sale price, the carry traders get worried. Well, I can't get out. I want to get out. I'm borrowing for 30 years. I don't want to be stuck with something that's gone into, it's not worth the price I paid for it. So this must continue to work. And you need lots of, so that means you need lots of sort of poor, undercapitalized people who pay. So you need lots of renters over here, poor, undercapitalized people who pay whatever rent you ask them. You also need some of them to go back to the auction so they can bid the price higher because you don't want to be bidding against other carry traders. You need desperate people who really want a home to just buy, 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 and that will drive the price higher. So, have I got everything, mate? But yeah, you've got to get some of the auction to get to bid the price up. And why this is now a worry? So if the auction doesn't work, volatility goes up. So you're thinking, oh gosh, should I still invest in this thing? Should I still sign my life away for 30 years? Or can I rely on this house price to go up? So you've got to get these people back to the auction. We know that a policy that's come into action in the last couple of days, well, that kind of solves that problem, makes the auction work again. Because the problem we were facing was that the average wage couldn't buy the average house. So the average punter is not there at the auction. That's a problem. They have to solve that. We have to get them back into the game to bid the price higher so carry traders know they can get out. So that's the way it works. Four factors. And all of them must be in place to make the carry trade run. So in finance, carry trades exist, they're a naturally occurring feature of a capitalist economy. Well, I'm going to show you another one soon. So they call it picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. So while all these factors are in place, you'll make a hell of a lot of money, and especially in real estate where people are desperate. I don't want to be in this line. I want to be over here. I want to be winning at the auction. So people are going to bid it higher and higher and higher. But if this changes, if the steamroller arrives, if anything, you lose one of those. Too much volatility, lose spread. Or lose your carry, goodbye. Leverage goes up, carry trade unwinds. And then the steamroller runs everybody over, and it's a terrible disaster. So that's the way that it works. Now, an economist won't tell you this because they're looking for supply and demand, and it is not about supply. Where is supply and demand here? May have something to do with the auction. Maybe you need an economist on your pit crew. You have one of them. Mostly they're looking after the coffee machine. But when we want to talk about the auction, maybe we can bring them over. Okay, come over and have a look at the auction. That's one part that you can look at. But you need to have sort of a more holistic view of how it works. An economist is only going to be useful within a larger system. You can't let them run the pit crew and analyze it with their silly abstract rules because they'll miss this. They won't see this. Now, the thing to notice here, before I go to the next slide, is that when you're running this carry trade, it's very lucrative, but you are borrowing for 30 years. This is not liquid, this carry trade. It's going to take a while to get out of it. So if we lose spread, there's going to be a lot of people rushing for the exit. It's going to take them a little bit longer to get out. So leverage is a problem here. This is incredibly lucrative, but leverage is a problem. Now let's have a look at another one. Now, see, this is a completely different carry trade. This one targets currency. It's called the yen carry trade. Now, this is one the finance, if there's anybody from finance watching, they might know about this. So it works exactly the same way. We have a carry trader, but they don't go to an auction. They go to the Central Bank of Japan, where you can borrow yen for 1% or whatever. So you do that. You borrow a whole lot of yen. You carry it across the Pacific to the S&P 500 and you throw it at the Magnificent Seven. Why do you do that? Because they're the sexiest stocks on the S&P 500. They're probably going to continue to produce a 5% dividend. So you're going to make 4% here. So the price. Well, let's do this. Now, as long as for as long as the price of the Mag 7 stays up. But if you've read John Dewey and you know that this is the most philosophical instrument in the body, not this, and then you conclude that AI is just instruction manuals from JB Hi-Fi talking to each other, then you better sell them out. But we won't go down that rabbit hole. So it works the same way. Leverage, you need leverage to borrow the money from Japan. Your spread is a little bit different. It's not your cost, it's not your sale price, and it's not your cost. It's your rate to borrow has got to be less than the equity dividends that you're going to get from whatever stocks you buy, or bond yields or whatever. You can buy bonds, but the Mag 7, that's what everybody's buying. And you can begin to notice what a carry trade does. So a carry trade will produce a capital accumulation in the targeted asset. So why are house prices in Australia so high? Well, because the carry trade's doing its job. It's an engine, it's a McLaren that doesn't win races, but it produces capital accumulation. And so that's, there you go. That's part of the reason the Mag 7 are by far and away the most valuable stocks on the S&P, because this yen carry, it's working now, the yen carry trade. If you watch enough financial podcasts, they'll be very worried about what happens if Japanese interest rates go up. And you might get a capital gain. So dividends or coupons, this is your carry. Dividends or coupons minus the cost of borrow plus a capital gain. That's your carry. You do that over and over and over and over and over again, and you'll make a hell of a lot of money because you're also short volatility, just like in Australia. You don't really want the Mag 7 to go up, up, down, up, down, up, down. You just want slow and steady gains so that you can get out whenever you need to. Now, yeah, and you do it over and over and over again. Now, this is something I want to sort of digress a bit to the. So since we spoke last time, Martin, I've been watching a lot of videos about housing, prices and affordability, and too many of them really. And the algo is on to me, so it's starting to send me all these Google ads about, people I can consult, like mortgage brokers and books. That I can download. And there's one book that is particularly annoying. And it's written by this guy. It's called 30 Before 30. So it's this kid who's written 30 Before 30, how you can get 30 investment properties before you turn 30 years old. Well, you don't need a book to write. You can do this in a slide. He'll be telling you a variation of this. Just like the yen carry trade. Well, first thing, if you want 30 properties, well, go to the bank and convince them to lend you some money. Then go and buy a house at an auction and make sure you buy it where you know you'll get spread. Then go and collect your capital gains and your sell it in a year, get your capital gain. End of book. And that's it. That's all you need to know. You don't need a book. You need a slide. So the yen carry trade, the thing to notice about it is that it's liquid. This targets currency. You can get out in a keystroke. So, oh gosh, we've got a new prime minister in Japan. That's volatility. Oh, what's she going to do? Your interest rate's going to go up? Sell. I'm out. You're out very quickly. So this is, this is pretty, this is a bit safer, a bit safer than the other one. Returns might not be as high. You're taking a bit of a risk on the Mag 7. Do you really think, instruction manuals talking to each other over the internet, is that going to solve the problems of the world? I don't think so, but I don't know. That's not my area. That's someone else's area. So highly liquid, you don't have to borrow for long, and you can get out in a keystroke. That's a carry trade. Works exactly the same way. You want nothing to change. You want the Mag 7 to go up 5%, Japan 1.5%. Don't change anything. This is one we talked about last week. The thing here to notice is we're targeting a different asset. We're targeting a commodity, and we're doing this in ancient Rome. Carry trades are the same wherever they exist, and they all work the same way. This one, the ancient grain carry trade, I spoke about it last week, works the exact same way. Different to yen, it targets grain, which is a commodity. So Egypt can only grow so much grain. Japan can print as much money as it wants. So we might need the economist here. We might say, look, come back, come over from the coffee machine, come back and have a look at, make some predictions about grain production on the Nile, et cetera, et cetera. Then they're useful, but only in the context of the larger structure of the way this thing works. So it works the same way. So what's this one? Again, leverage. We have to be able to borrow. Someone has to lend us money, and we have to. This is not, yeah. So then the spread is the cost of Egyptian grain, the sale price in Rome. So in the Nile Delta, here are some Egyptians making grain or growing grain because the Nile Delta is very, very fertile. You can grow anything there. Over here in Rome, we have Caesar and his unruly Roman mob. The Romans are totally out of control most of the time, so you have to keep them under control. And the way you do that is with circuses and bread. So we need bread. So a carry trader will spot, oh, here's an option. I bet Caesar will, he wants to stay in power. I bet he'll pay me a lot for grain. So I bet I can buy it cheaper over here and sell it higher there. This is not trade. I'm not sort of national rail carrying grain to Rome. I buy the grain. National rail doesn't buy the grain. Stotts Transport doesn't buy whatever's on the back of its truck. A carry trader does. And they own it and they take it to Rome. And their carry is spread, the cost minus the sale price, spread minus cost of transport and leverage. And that's how they make money. Now, it's the same again. Your short volatility. I don't want anything to change. I don't want Pharaoh to ban me from buying grain. And I don't want seas. I don't want, I want to keep the Roman mob under control, but I don't want them too under control. Because I need to sell bread, and we need more and more circuses. So as long as we can convince Caesar to hold circuses, I can sell bread. So that's my volatility. I'm not borrowing. This is slightly more risky than the yen carry trade because the money that I'm borrowing here is for about a season for one because grain grows, like over one sort of season. And I nearly said academic year there. Grain doesn't grow over the, it grows for a season. So you've got to borrow it, borrow one season worth of money. If this goes pear-shaped, yeah, you lose, a year's worth of money. And that could be a problem. But that's what sent Lehman Brothers under. They were cotton carry traders, as we discussed last week. So it's a bit harder to get out. So what I'm going to tell you now, let's go back to Australia. Now, this is where it gets really scary because this is an unnatural real estate carry trade. No one's ever done this in the history of capitalism. No one has ever targeted real estate for a carry trade. No one's done it. It's totally unique to Australia. It's quite frightening. So, you've got to borrow for 30 years now, 20, 25 years, or however long it is. Grain carry borrows for a season because houses and grain have different characteristics. The yen carry trader might borrow for 2 weeks. They can get out. But houses are not. So if this goes pear-shaped, you're going to lose 30 years, 30 years worth of investment. That's how much money you've got on the table. So you better make sure that your volatility is low. So I call this an unnatural carry trade. Why? Well, what does carry depend on here? Unnatural policies. If you go back, my mouse has stopped working. So if you go, oh, here we go. So if you go back here, this is a natural carry trade. It doesn't depend on, oh, here's an opportunity for me. I'll sell Caesar grain. Go back here. This is, oh, okay, Japan. Yeah, I'll get cheap money there. I'll take it to the Mag 7. It doesn't depend on, it's natural. This is unnatural. It relies on these two policies. So your principal volatility here, number four, your principal volatility here is, well, what's happening with these two policies? These policies go away, I lose my carry. carry or spill over into spread? Oh, this doesn't work. Without those two pulses, it doesn't work. That's your principal volatility. Now, I argue that the most significant decision, and this is kind of why we're in the position we're in, the most significant decision that has contributed to the situation that Australia is occupying right now, it's not COVID. COVID only reduces the cost of leverage. It's not even really the 2019 election, because you still don't know for sure. So Shorten loses the 2019 election. Oh, it looks like negative gearing and capital gains are here to stay until at least the next election. 3 more years of carry. Woohoo. The principal reason that we're in this situation is because of Albanese's reaction to his loss. So he takes the removal of negative gearing and the capital gains tax off the Labor Party policy agenda. That just removes volatility from the equation altogether. It's like, oh, so Albo, what's happening with negative gearing capital gains? We're going to have a conference. So we still don't know what's happening. So we can't go all in yet. But once he takes it off the agenda, then it's off to the races. Oof. Once it's off the agenda, it's not coming back for a long time. You've got both major parties keeping these policies. Volatility plummets. And that's much more important than the cost of leverage. Cost of leverage could go up, down, who knows? Mostly it'll stay down, who knows? I don't know. But that's where you get your carry. Once he takes that off the Labor Party agenda, that's it. House prices will skyrocket. This engine will run brilliantly. And that's what's happened. So this is where I sort of want to play now to really demonstrate how it's working and how this engine works and why we're in such trouble. Carry trade temptation round. Mom, do you watch Tipping Point? Have you ever watched Tipping Point? It's a game show. You know Tipping Point. I love Tipping Point. It's a strangely fascinating game show that whenever I go over to visit my mother, I sit there and we watch Tipping Point, and I get really into it. It's run by Todd Woodbridge here, who's a former Wimbledon star, and he's like probably the best game show host I've ever seen. He's really genuine and authentic. So for the viewers, Temptation Round in carry trade, Tipping Point works like this. So there's a jackpot counter and it goes in a machine, and there are two shelves to the machine. And the idea is you answer trivia questions and Todd Woodbridge gives you a counter and you put it in the machine and it falls down like a pinball machine, and you try and push the jackpot counter over the tipping point. And it's quite nerve-wracking because the machine, it bounces around like pinball and you don't know whether it's going to go over. So if you get to the end of the trivia round, and you haven't pushed the jackpot counter over the tipping point, Woodbridge goes into what he calls, what the show calls, jackpot temptation. And what you have to do is you have to play jackpot temptation, you surrender your prizes, right? And he'll make you a deal. And he will say, okay, depending on where the jackpot counter is, if it's quite close to the tipping point, he'll say, well, look, John, I'll give you two counters and I'll up the jackpot from 20,000. It's usually 20,000. I'll up it to 40,000. And if he if he if you go, you go, I don't know. Should I take the risk? Should I take the risk? And then he might say, well, look, I'll also throw in a trip to Singapore. And then you'll go, oh, I'll do it. And the crowd will start shouting, jackpot, jackpot. And you'll do it, and then you usually lose. So you have to play this. There's a carry trade temptation round that's going on right now. So you're in this machine that's guaranteed to produce higher prices as long as volatility stays low. Unnatural policies. That's your principal volatility. So that's like jackpot temptation round. It's like saying to Woodbridge, well, what are you going to do? Should I buy this house? Should I go and buy this house and play the carry trade and try and do 30 before 30? What, Albo, what's going on? What's going on with these policies? Are you going to keep them? And Albanese says, yeah, these policies are going to stay. And I think, oh, well, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's like him giving me one counter, but I need more. I want to make sure I push the jackpot counter over the tipping point. So I say, well, what else are you? And usually contestants will try and shake more counters out of Woodbridge, and he will usually give in. So you might say, well, what else are you going to do for me, Albo? You're going to keep these policies. What else have you got for me? So Claire O'Neill might say, well, I'll tell you what, John, it's the policy of this government that house prices are going to go up. So I'll guarantee you spread. And that's like she's given me three counters. And I go back and I think, whoa, gee, that's pretty good. I reckon I can knock the jackpot counter over with that one. And I've got to borrow for 30 years, mind you. I've got to pay, this house is now worth $1.1 million. I've got to borrow 30 years worth of money to buy this. I better be sure that I'm going to have spread. I know that I've got carry, but how are you going to do it, Albo? How are you going to make my sale price go up? And he might say, oh, well, John, and this is like Woodbridge raising the jackpot to $50,000. And you think, oh, I've just got to do it. So he'll say, well, I'll tell you what, see these people in the line here? I'll increase their capacity to borrow. I'll get them back into the auction and they'll bid the price higher. And that's how I'll make your sale price go up. And I think, whoa, you know, this crowd would be jackpot, jackpot. They'd be screaming that. And I'd probably say, yeah, look, he's got to do it. And my mother would say, oh, no, he shouldn't do it. He shouldn't do it. But then Woodbridge will do the one extra thing. You'll waver and he'll say, I'll tell you what, I'll throw in a trip to Singapore. And here's your trip to Singapore in Carry Trade Temptation Round. So Carry Trade, the Carry Trade functions much like Temptation Round and Tipping Point. Immigration is your volatility suppression. So it's not central to the carry trade, but it's the trip to Singapore. It pushes it over the edge and the crowd's screaming and you just go, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go and buy this house. I'm going to put it in the rental market because I know that most of these immigrants are probably going to end up renting. Some of them might be able to buy, some of them might be cashed up. So they're going to keep the auction frothing and that'll be really good. And it'll put, you know, it puts, it kind of is special sauce. It, you know, she says it's special sauce. It is special sauce, but it's special sauce designed to suppress volatility in the carry trade. It's not central to it. It's just a trip to Singapore. I would have done it without the immigrants. So look, take these away, take the immigrants away. The carry trade works just fine. All the principal things are still in place. Capacity to borrow, yeah, okay. It'll still go up. But they put the immigration in to push it over the top. It's a trip to Singapore. It's not central. So, yeah, you need to reduce immigration. Yeah, take it away, reduce it. Still works. Carry trade's still going to work. It might be less frothy and, you know, volatility will go up a little bit, but it still works. So, it's not central to how this thing works. You do need to reduce it. But not for the reasons. Economists will say, oh, well, it's, you know, they contribute to demand. Well, they kind of do, but within the structure of a carry trade. And if you take them out of the equation, it still works. And if you do, I think they want you to attack them on immigration because they can very easily shoot you down in flames, call you all the names under the sun. And if the auction stops being frothy, well, we'll just bring it back. And we'll say, oh, John, he wanted to get rid of immigration. Don't listen to him. No, he's, you know, he's mentally, you know, he's not right. He's not a good person. They'll just bring it straight back. So it's kind of a bit of a false narrative to say that, you know, you could very easily say, so people who think that you can reduce immigration and you're going to solve this housing problem, they don't know how the housing sector works. They just don't understand how it works. So you do need to reduce it. But understand why you need to reduce it. And if you want to argue for immigration, to reduce immigration, for goodness sake, argue about it in these terms, or they will shoot you down. So what they will say is, what you say is, well, Claire, we need to reduce immigration because you're using the immigrants. You're bringing them over here, and they're your special sauce, but they're special sauce for reducing volatility in your dangerous carry trade. And you're not being fair to them. You're going to put most of them in the rental market. Some of them might be able to buy, but most of them won't. Then they'll realize the scam that you're running on them and they'll get very, very angry and they'll, you know, become a big problem. You know, they'll realize, oh, that this is like, you know, Nick Cave's catastrophic plan. I'm a microscopic cog in her catastrophic plan. So that's how you talk about it. You don't attack the immigrants for suppressing demand or for stimulating demand. You say you need to reduce it, but in the context of the carry trade, because they're not central to the carry trade. If you think that you're going to reduce immigration and solve this problem, you don't understand how it works. Okay, so that's all I've got to say about that. So this is the next thing I want to tell you about. Now, this is another thing that really annoys me. There's a lot of things that annoy me. What about Canada and New Zealand, John? What about them? This is the latest thing to compare Canada and New Zealand. You can't do that. They don't run a carry trade. Australia is totally unique. You can't draw policy lessons from the way that New Zealand and Canada operate to make conclusions about the Australian housing sector. Why? Because there's no carry trade. Okay. In New Zealand, there's neither carry nor spread. I'll just move this thing here because I can't read it. There's no negative gearing and there's no capital gains tax. There used to be negative gearing, but they took it away. Now, if you take it away once and try and bring it back, you could very easily, oh, you might just take it away again. So my volatility is still high. I can't trust them. Once you take it away, I can't trust you. So there's volatility. There's no capital gains tax. There's what's called a bright line tax, where you get taxed at the full marginal rate for anything under 10 years on property. There's no political commitment to rising house prices. They don't play jackpot temptation round in New Zealand. You made a video last night, Martin, where the Prime Minister and the Housing Minister are arguing about whether or not house prices should go up or down. I can't play jackpot temptation with that going on. It doesn't work. It doesn't work the same way. So there's actually the reverse. They used to say stuff like, oh, now house prices are too high. You can't run a carry trade in that circumstance. So you can't go to New Zealand looking for policy lessons to draw because it runs completely differently in Australia. Canada is exactly the same. In Canada, there's no carry and there's not really any spread. There's negative gearing, but it's highly restricted in the way that it applies. So New Zealand is like a Red Bull F1 car. This one's like a Ferrari. You can't, the parts, you might have, the same part. You might have brakes on the Ferrari, but you can't put Ferrari brakes on a McLaren. They won't fit. They do the same. They do a similar thing, but they're not designed to work. You got to look at the car totally. So it's highly restricted in the way that it applies. It's like a business startup incentive. There's not really spread because there's a 50% inclusion on profits from sales. But if the capital gain is deemed as business income, there's 100% inclusion. So if you're trading houses or flipping them, basically not being a serious kind of property investor who's going to run the investment like a proper rental business, they will call it business income and tax it at 100%. There's no spread because you can't be 100% sure you're going to get the 50% inclusion. So there's volatility and there's no commitment to rising house prices. So it's different. When you talk about migration in New Zealand or Canada, you can have a sensible discussion about it. You can say, oh, well, migrants add demand to the housing sector. Maybe we should reduce migration. Yeah, because there's no carry trade. But you can't say that in Australia. Why? Because they're not, it's not about them. It's about them suppressing volatility. You take them away, the carry trade still works. You take them away in New Zealand, you will get a reduction in house prices. Now, an economist can't see this because they're at an immediate disadvantage, thinking that it's all about supply and demand. It's all graphs and numbers, and what's over here is the same as over there. And that's not a McLaren, that we're all, driving around in the same car. We are not. Anybody who tries to make comparisons between New Zealand and Canada does not understand how the Australian housing sector works, and they don't understand New Zealand or Canada either. So you shouldn't listen to them. So here's something for the economists, my colleagues. I'm very sort of collegial and all that, and they're economists at UTS, and they're good guys. So here's a table for you. This will make you comfort. This will oh, here's some comfort food, a table. Yeah, see it's all here for you. You can't. It's completely different. It's 5-star carry friendly in Australia. Fully allowed negative gearing. Full capital gains after 12 months. Main residence exempt. New Zealand, no, it's gone. Even if they bring it back, they might take it away. High volatility. No formal CGT discount. Bright line rule. No carry. You have to hold it for 10 years. The world could be over in 10 years. You can't run a carry trade in those circumstances. You can't play carry trade temptation. Canada's the same. It's a bit more friendly, but not the same. So you can't draw comparisons. You can't say, oh, Australia's a bit like Canada. It's a bit like New Zealand. No, it's not. It's completely different. And the reason you can't see it is because you're not asking how it works. And you need to understand how it works to understand the trouble we're in. So, what's the big deal about carry trades, John? What's the problem with these? Well, ordinarily, not much. So carry trade is a naturally occurring phenomenon that can develop across almost any sector or commodity or asset class. We've seen that. I've shown you that. We've seen the grain carry trade and we've seen the yen carry trade. Yen carry trade, that can provide needed capital for investment. So yeah, go to Japan, borrow some money, give it to Zuckerberg at Meta. Maybe he'll build a better headset and we can all play Half-Life Alyx with a lot more confidence that it's not going to lock up and crash. And so that'd be a great thing. Whether or not he does it, I don't know. You know, give Tesla some money. Go back to Tesla, Elon. Stop messing around in the with the US government. Go and build a better car. Here, have some Japanese money. Okay, great. Maybe he builds a better car. Grain carry, you can even providing Pharaoh reserves an amount of grain that local Egyptians can purchase. Because what will happen in Egypt is because it's a commodity that you're buying, the carry traders will compete with hungry Egyptians, and the price of grain in Egypt will go up. Sound familiar, Australian people? Sound familiar? What's happening? Yeah, with your first time. Yeah. Anyway, as long as Pharaoh reserves an amount for domestic use, that'll be fine. And he's got a trade surplus. And look, those Romans have to be kept under control. They're a rowdy lot, and we don't need them marching through everybody's country. Let them watch a circus and have some bread. Useful carry trade. Real estate carry in Australia is not naturally occurring, and it does nothing. It does only harm to the Australian economy. It doesn't do anything. Why? Because it's not naturally occurring. It relies on a mistake. An interaction between two policies that nobody thought would happen, and thereafter political incompetence that refused to change it. Incompetence. That's what it's the heart of this. That's what's so disturbing about this. So what does it do? Well, we know what it does. It's a McLaren, but it's not designed to, win Oscar the Drivers' Championship. It's designed to bid up house prices, make rents and homes unaffordable and less available. You don't need my slide to tell you that. Go out and have a look around. That's what it does. And it's working brilliantly now since Albo reduced volatility, since he took removal of capital gains and negative gearing off the policy agenda at the Labor Party conference in 2021 and gave them certainty. And now they'll go up even more because this is what it's designed to do. So you don't need me to tell you that. What's the next one now? My slide's breaking down. No. It consigns the undercapitalized to the rental market, even the streets. So if you don't have enough money to go to that rental market and bid against the carry traders to get a house, well, guess what? You're in that line and you're never getting out. Unless you've got wealthy parents, you're done. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And even if you are sort of, you give money for your kids, the next generation, then the price is going to go up again. And they're not going to have money. Your grandkids aren't going to have money. They're going to be back on the queue to rent. And it's going to be carry traders that own 30 before 30. Because you're going to need, when prices go up, you're going to need more leverage. So you're going to need to buy more houses. So you're going to, you better, actually, you should go and download that book. If this is the way that's going, get the 30 before 30 because you're going to need them. And it consigns you to the streets. Sad stories coming out there. In my hometown, the Salvos recently stopped their meal kitchens for people who are on the streets because they can't afford them anymore. So they're all going to starve. But, oh, that's great. Raises profits for the carry traders on both these outcomes. Oh, good. That puts more pressure. You better buy. You better get in there and buy right now. Otherwise, you'll be on the streets. So it's profits for me on both those outcomes. So it's not good. It doesn't do anything. It sucks ever more capital and human resources into the housing sector. It's all that happens in Australia now. Holes in homes, Martin, as you say. And it'll just be more and more capital it will draw in. And more people. Everybody will have to, go and be a tradie and start some sort of business or whatever. It reduces productivity. Well, that's obvious. Lowest productivity, I don't know that for sure, but it's very low. Why? Well, of course it is. You don't even need this. Of course it's low. That's what the carry trade will do. Why would you invest in anything else? It detracts from all economic growth outside the housing sector. If you want to start a business, you better make sure it's connected to housing. That's the only way you're going to make money. So reduce productivity, because a house doesn't do anything. Like if you know, the yen carry trade gives money to Zuckerberg. He might produce the Meta Quest 3, and it might be really good. We don't know, but maybe it'll be really good. Maybe he will invent some sort of brilliant AI and solve the problems, or there's a chance, but houses are not going to do that. It produces an imbalance in bank lending. You don't need me to tell you this. Many other people on the internet could tell you that. Imbalance in bank lending, two-thirds of the mortgage book, two-thirds of everything the Commonwealth Bank does is bank lending makes it vulnerable. Produce an army of carry traders piling in on housing who hollow out democratic politics. So who do you think, the guy who wrote 30 before 30, who do you think he's going to vote for? I bet he's got a lot of mates too. And they're all going to vote. They're all going to come at you and they're going to say, don't listen to John Wright. Don't listen to that guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's just a silly academic. He does philosophy. Go and talk to an economist. They'll set you straight. They kind of want economists mostly to talk about housing, I think, because they're not asking how it works. And that's good. That's good for the carry traders. You don't want me telling you how it works, because when you see how it works, you think, well, we really need to change this. Well, we don't want that to happen. Because, yeah, so we'll hollow out democratic politics. We'll give John Wright a thumbs down so no one sees this video. We'll be nasty, blah, 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 blah. This is the big one. It's not even capitalism, this thing. It allocates capital inefficiently and ineffectively, producing a capital accumulation in the housing sector. So when I wrote the book, it was 11 trillion, four times the size of the economy. Now, I heard Leif van Onselen say it's 11.7 trillion. He's pretty good. So I just put it in, but I put some question marks. 11.7 trillion. It's a McLaren designed to produce high house prices. It'll get to 15. If you keep feeding it this, it'll get there. And it allocates capital inefficiently and ineffectively, producing a capital imbalance. That's why Australian house prices are so high. Just like the Mag 7, the yen carry trade produces a capital imbalance in the sexiest stocks on the S&P 500. Same thing happens in Australia. That's why they're so expensive, because it's designed to do this. So this is where it gets really scary. It creates the conditions necessary for its own collapse. So all carry trades in the history of the world, they all collapse. Why? Because you can't keep volatility in a box forever, no matter how much you try. Ancient Rome fell. The Egyptian grain carry trade, that's not around anymore. All of them fell. So how do they usually fall? How does the carry trade usually end? People notice the capital imbalance. People think, Commonwealth Bank. They watch Matt Barry talk about the Commonwealth Bank and they say, oh, that's really weird. The Commonwealth Bank in Australia, that's one of the most profitable banks in the world. That's weird. Oh, Australia has got five of its major cities in the most unaffordable housing markets in the world. Isn't Australia really big? Haven't they got, why is it so expensive over there? The Australian housing sector is worth four times the size of the economy. And everywhere else, house prices are starting to fall, but not in Australia. They're going up. Why is that? People overseas notice this. So, Commonwealth Bank, I'm not an expert on this, but Commonwealth Bank write bonds denominated in foreign currencies. And when say they go to Jamie Dimon, they want to roll over their foreign denominated bonds, Jamie Dimon starts to notice the capital imbalance and says, oh, I want more collateral. If you want to roll over those bonds, I think you've got a housing bubble. I'm going to make your leverage more expensive. Leverage gets more expensive and the carry trade slowly ebbs away. So what happens is people notice the capital imbalance, and that's how it ends if it's left to itself. It exposes the Commonwealth to a serious risk of a major financial crisis. Well, that should be obvious, because we're borrowing for 30 years to run this carry trade. 30 years. If house prices go down, where's the bottom? Where is the bottom? And it's the banks, when the banks, if it goes down too much, I mean, you can go to ChatGPT. I just ask it. I asked it a few years ago about how much do Australian house prices have to fall before the banks need to be recapitalised? It'll give you an answer. I can't remember what it took, but it wasn't that much. So the banks will stop lending eventually if they get into negative equity. So 30 before 30 guy will fall into negative equity, but someone's been foolish enough to lend him the money. If they go into negative equity, they'll stop lending. And that means, and once lending stops, The carry trade stops, and then it goes down, 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 down. And where's the bottom in this? Where is the bottom? I don't know. So we're at risk of a major financial crisis. Why? Because nobody has asked, how does it work? Nobody has looked at this. What I'm telling you, I haven't really, the only time I've spoken to anybody about this book was you last time, Martin. This is the first time I'm actually presenting this stuff. Everybody's too busy now. So the carry trade is kind of like a Death Star hanging over Australia. So here's the Death Star. Death Star arrives on your doorstep and it says, do what we say, we'll blow up your planet. The Australian housing sector, it sort of sucks the life out of Australia. It'll keep sucking and sucking and sucking. And you'll need 30 by 40, 30 by 30. You need to get that book, I think. Buy it, read it, because the Death Star is here. So this can't go on. It simply can't go on. We can't have a housing market that's worth $15, $16 trillion, and it's a machine that's designed to take us there. Can't go on. There is no, the capital imbalance is already here. We're already at, if Leif Van Onselen is correct, which, you know, he's a good economist, he's probably right, there's no solution to this. You can't, all this tweaking around the edges, all this, oh, it's a supply, it's not a supply problem. It's got nothing to do with supply. I don't need, we don't need to, have I shown you a graph? Have we had one instance where supply was relevant and it was ancient Egypt. Maybe we get the guy from the pit crew, we get him to have a look at the carry trade. Maybe there's a small role for supply and demand somewhere in the way the engine works, but it's not integral to it. It doesn't work that. It's a carry trade. Works on four principles, and you must address these four principles or it will crash. Carry crash is inevitable within the dynamics of the system and the trade. Someone's going to notice this. Someone's going to say, that's weird. Adelaide is now in the top five most unaffordable cities in the world. And they got knocked out of the AFL finals just recently in straight sets. And Port Adelaide isn't doing much better. So you tell me how Adelaide is in the top five unaffordable housing markets in the world. Well, it's a carry trade. That's why. So why is it such a, why is it a Death Star? Because Australian real estate carry involves excessive leverage, which involves the private banking system. Someone lent 30 by 30 the money, which involves the Reserve Bank of Australia. They're going to have to step in, which involves the currency. So I heard the guy in the West Report say, oh, look, you know, it's all a mess. You know, if the prices go down, the government will just bail it out. We'll just bail the system out. Well, can they? America could bail it out because they print the world's reserve currency, but we don't. Ours is a commodity currency, which makes it sort of valuable. But this is where you need the economist in the pit crew to come in and say, all right, John, you know, take a step back here. I've got this. I'll look into this. This is where the economy becomes relevant, but only within the symptom of, only within the structure of the carry trade. So this is the kind of the first time we've decided that we need them. How much is it going to cost if this blows up? That's a good question for an economist. And I can't give you the answer. This is where I need to do multidisciplinary research, which we love doing at the university. So this is where the economists can contribute. So real estate carry, does it? Here's a question for the economists. Real estate carry constitutes an existential threat to the Australian Commonwealth. It must undergo reform. Discuss. Okay, away you go, economists. Work on that. Tell me, because Oscar Piastri needs to know. We need to know. We need to know how it works. Is it an existential threat to the Commonwealth? And don't use your models. Use the carry trade. There was some ridiculous research that came out a few years ago that said, oh, if you get rid of negative gearing in the capital gains tax, house prices will only go down by 2%. Get out of here. Get out. It's a carry trade. If you take negative, if you even talk about reducing negative gearing a little bit, that's more volatility. You must use economics within the structure of the way that I presented it. Real estate carry trade constitutes an existential threat to the existence. There's a discussion for an enterprising PhD student in the economics faculty. Discuss. There you go. This is what we do. This is what academics do. We supervise PhDs. So what can we do? So Martin, what can we do? It's a Death Star. I'm getting a bit depressed. I'm a humanities graduate. It shouldn't be up to me to explain this to people.
It is a very important question that you've posed. And, you know, if you look at what's happened recently with the first owner grant process, with now them guaranteeing the 15% between 80 and 95% or whatever, you know, whatever it is, it putting more burden on the government again, right? If things go wrong.
Yeah.
This is, I've said for a long, long time, this is an unexploded, undiffused bomb. It is going to go off at some point because it is unsustainable, right?
Yes.
It is the Death Star, but nobody wants to actually accept it. Nobody wants to actually realize the implications. One, if it goes boom, and two, the Death Star is already sucking energy out of the rest of the economy, right? The reason the Australian economy is actually so weak is because more and more and more of it is being consumed by the housing Ponzi. That's the problem.
Forgive me for interrupting. Now, I just want to say that people say it's a Ponzi, but it's not really. It's a carry trade. And you have to it's like a disease. You have to diagnose the disease properly because a Ponzi is ultimately worth nothing. A Ponzi is a scam. It's worth nothing. This is not a Ponzi because Australian housing is ultimately worth something, but we don't know what it is. So it looks a bit like a Ponzi, but it's not. It's a carry trade. And when you define the disease as a carry trade, you know how to treat it. Okay, so this is what we're dealing with. We've got to be very, very careful when we touch this thing. So especially now that Albanese has removed the volatility, everybody's gone all in, and the carry traders are even betting on house prices going up now. What if it doesn't? What if people, you know, what if people start listening to silly humanities graduates from UTS? What if they don't buy? What happens then? I mean, this is an intervention. So what I'm making now is an intervention that could presumably increase volatility because we understand how it works. So we've got to be very, very careful with what we do, because if this thing goes off, we need that PhD student to finish that last question that we just set. So that's something useful the economics faculty could be doing. So what can we do? What can we do? Now, this is also where economics will fail, because they'll come in now and they'll say stuff like, oh, well, you just don't vote for parties that have negative gearing and capital gains tax. Just don't vote for them. Well, guess what? Guess what, people? Those parties don't exist. They're gone. If we're going to reform this thing, we can't do that, because Albanese is not going to put this on the... the Labor Party, you still have some hope for the Labor Party. It is democratic, ultimately. You can put this on the policy agenda at Labor Party conference, but they're not going to do it right now. So it's got to... And to get it on the conference, to get it on the agenda for Labor Party conference, I forgot, Lisa someone was the person who put it... some sort of minor person in Sydney, maybe the major, I don't know, but it came democratically. So Bill Shorten's policy came up democratically. That's what needs to happen. It needs to go back on the agenda. And you need to sort of be careful about how you couch it so that the carry traders don't panic. And there's no guarantee that they will not panic. If you're lucky, you'll get out of this with a deep recession. But if you're unlucky, if we keep going the way we are, you're talking depression. Maybe, depending on what that PhD student says for the question. Remember the essay question, the PhD question I set? That's something that they should be doing in the economics faculty. They should be investigating this. So what can we do? Now, I'm a philosopher. Then this is where I'm going to get a little bit bolshy. Because when I was undergraduate, you'd run into these economics types at the student union. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I do philosophy. Oh, well, what's that going to get you, mate? Well, I can recognize a carry trade when I see one. How about you? And I can tell you what you need to do about it. So this is what you need to do. And this is where you come in, Martin. Australia needs pilots. So you got to think of me here as someone who's done an analysis of the Death Star. I'm going to tell you where I think the small thermal exhaust port just below the main port is. I'm going to tell you where I think you can attack this thing and get it towards a reform. But it's going to be dangerous. It could blow up. We don't want it to blow up. but it could well do it, and we can't really control it. So Australia needs pilots. This is your DFA posse. We need pilots and squadron leaders to fly against this thing. We need them to fly against the Death Star in the name of the old Commonwealth. So that's what we, and this is, I'm pitching this directly at your audience. We need squadron leaders. We need people like, we need Biko, we need Tarek, we need Van Onselen, we need Cameron Murray. So they're all red leader, gold leader, blue leader, green leader, and we need them to fly against the Death Star. And I could give you an analysis of where I think you need to put your proton torpedoes. Now, I can't make videos like those guys. I've got a job. I can barely manage to put slides together. I can't fly an X-wing, is what I'm saying. Other people need to fly the X-wing, but I can tell you where you need to shoot your proton torpedoes to bring this thing down. So we need to reform the taxation system. We need to return to the days of the old Commonwealth before 2019, when the carry traders took control. So after that election, the carry traders take control. They force it off Albanese's policy agenda, and straight up. And it will go up until we get to 15 trillion, then it will ultimately explode. Jamie Dimon will notice it. The Americans will notice it. And they'll start shorting the Australian economy, short the banks, et cetera, et cetera. Again, there's another PhD topic for an economist. I can't speak to that in any detail. I'm a philosopher. So, but what I can tell you is where to shoot your proton torpedoes. So this is the story they want you to believe. This is what they tell you. Now, I'm borrowing here from the world's most dangerous philosopher, Slavoj Žižek, who's a Slovenian, he's brilliant, a brilliant philosopher. I would encourage you to read him. He's quite hard to understand, tells lots of jokes, which I like. So anyway, let me unfold. So this is what you're told, and this is ideology. This is pure ideology. Žižek says, so most people think ideology is like glasses. You wear glasses that obstruct your vision, then you take the glasses off and you see the world as it really is. That's not ideology. Ideology is something added to the world. It's added to the world like Pokemon Go. If you search Žižek and Pokemon Go, you'll find this. It's like Pokemon Go. It's something added that makes the world more interesting. And it convinces you that what you're actually seeing is not what you're seeing. So this is pure ideology, and this is how the carry trade is held together. The mum and dad investor, complete ideology. So this is the story. Mum and dad investor, these people are public-spirited people providing supply to the rental sector. How do you see that? I don't see that. Rents have never been more expensive. We've had 20 years, 25 years of the mum and dad investor, and look at the line, where they're ordinary Australians trying to get ahead. That's not, they're not the, I don't get sent those Google ads. Be an ordinary Australian trying to get ahead. I get 30 before 30. I get contact this mortgage broker so I can throw money at the housing sector. They're not ordinary Australians trying to get ahead. They're carry traders. Cops, miners, teachers, and nurses saving for retirement. Are they? Isn't that what superannuation is for? Save for retirement that way? Žižek says that you can tell when you're looking at ideology because it's contradictory. So it tells two different stories at the same time and pushes them together. So they're cops, teachers, nurses, and saving for their retirement. But didn't the Liberal Party have a plan that you should be able to get access to your retirement funds early so you can throw it at the housing market to save for your retirement? So you save for your retirement by taking away the funds that are meant for your retirement and putting it into housing so you can save for your retirement. It doesn't make sense. Ideology. People who own one, two, but sometimes four or five or six properties, and that's 30 before 30. Pure ideology. These people don't exist. The mum and dad investor does not exist. It is ideology. It's like a Pokemon. It's put there to get you to act in a certain way. Oh, mum and dad, here they are. They're such lovely people. Oh, I don't want to hurt them. You go on the radio, you go on the television, you start talking about this. I say, but John, we don't want to hurt mum and dad investors. Well, I would say, well, we don't, well, no, we don't. We certainly don't. But we're lucky because they don't exist. These people are not mum and dad investors. And this is the small thermal exhaust port just below the main port. This is where you need to attack. This is where your DFA posse, Biko, Tarek, all these guys, this is where you need. No, not the immigrants. They're not central to it. It's this. These people are carry traders. They're not public-spirited people. This is what they are. They're carry traders. I've shown you this. We've seen how this works. This is like looking at the, without the Pokemon Go. Capacity to borrow, they're jacked up on credit, 30 before 30. Covetous of outsized capital gains. That's why they're constantly on my Google ads. They're exposing the Commonwealth to risk of financial crisis. Yep, that's what they're doing. And they're hollowing out democratic politics. Of course they are. That's what they're doing. They're not going to like this at all. But that's who you are. You're a carry trader. And that's where you attack. Once you start asking questions about this, the whole thing falls apart. Nobody believes in the housing sector already. But when you start, so you say to, what's her name? The housing, I keep forgetting her name.
Claire O'Neill.
What's her name? Yeah, that one. Yeah. So she says, oh, John, we don't want to hurt mum and dad investors. Well, Claire, we don't need, we don't need, I don't want to hurt mum and dad investors, but we're lucky because they don't exist because they're carry traders. And then she says, John, well, what's a carry trade? And then she has to put up with me for an hour going on about this. Volatility increases. People see this carry trader, see the hang on, this philosophy guy, he's on volatility. Ooh. This could, I don't believe in this either. I'm not, I'm, it's actually 30. I pretend to be a mum and dad investor, but I'm actually 30 before 30. I want to make a shed load on this. Volatility goes up. This is where you get political change. This is how you, remember I talked about Marie Antoinette last week? Is that the Queen of France? Or is that an enemy of the revolution, threat to public sector? It's the same thing. Who is this person? Is it a mum and dad investor or is it a real estate carry trader? Once you start talking about this, it falls apart and then you'll get change. The way that you get change is through democratic, someone in the Australian Labor Party puts this on the agenda at the next conference. We need to go back to Bill Shorten's policies of 2019 and then see the panic, then watch house prices go down. Even the suggestion that this might change. So what I'm saying to you is this, and this is to your posse. This is kind of like, Luke, there aren't, it's like Biko, there are no property investors. Use the force, Biko. There are no mum and dad investors. There are only real estate carry traders. There are no investment properties. How can there be? Because there are no investors. They're carried assets. There are no investment properties. You start talking like this, volatility goes up, goes on the agenda at the next Labor Party conference. Get back to Bill Shorten's policies. Carry traders must have the chance. See, we're helping them. We don't want to hurt mum and dad investors. Trouble is, we don't have any. We need to get some. We need to give them the carry traders an opportunity to become mum and dad investors by reforming capital gains tax and the negative gearing. That's what we need to do. We're helping them. I love them. I love mum and dad. But we need more of them. We have to give them the opportunity. We're helping them help themselves. This is how you start talking about it. You don't attack the immigrants. It's like you're flying X-wings. If you're attacking immigrants, you are flying valuable X-wing fighters over an area that's heavily protected by anti-aircraft fire, and you're going to shoot them down. And you're going to come back, and I'm going to be like that scene in Top Gun. You don't own that X-wing. The taxpayer does, Biko. You attack the carry traders. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to turn into that guy. And that's my role. I can't fly an X-wing. So reform has got, supply is irrelevant to carry. This is another thing. All the other podcasts that are presented, they're all about, oh, well, it's obviously supply. I saw this on Thursday night, some ba two banker, a banker from Sydney and some other guy saying, well, it's all about supply. You can talk about negative gearing, but it's actually, no, it's irrelevant. And the reason it's irrelevant is because you're not looking at it. You're not asking how it works. Supply is irrelevant to real estate carry. Where prices are certain to rise, carry traders will only buy more supply. It doesn't make sense. Claire O'Neill has told you that house prices are going to go up. How can it possibly be about supply and demand? Doesn't make sense. Reform must affect leverage, spread, volatility, and carry. The way we get out of this, the way we save the Commonwealth, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to prevent a depression. We save, depending on what caveat, depending on what that enterprising PhD in economics concludes with the essay question I sent. That's a PhD topic. We're trying to save the Commonwealth. You've got to start jawboning it. Jawboning, increase volatility. Get it back on the agenda. Get Labor on message. Maybe talk about reducing the capital gains tax by a third. So give them 33%. That'll still affect it. The house prices will still go down. I can't make my what? I can't make my outsized capital gains. I'm not going to borrow that much money. It'll go down. So you need, but the big thing you need to do is clarify the identity of those engaged in upholding a dangerous and inefficient carry trade that's also ineffective, and it's an existential threat to the Commonwealth. So it's like I'm saying, use the force, Biko. Tarek. What does he say next? He says, trust me. Leith, let go. That's what I'm doing. I can't make these videos. You need to start jawboning this. See, this is multidisciplinary research we're doing now, Martin. This is good. We're working together. You also need to be like Han Solo. And this is the one I'm going to finish on, Martin. I've gone on too long here. You reach for your blaster. You also got to stop listening to people because people don't want you to know how it works. Because if you know how it works, you'll start changing things. People don't want change. You're a member of parliament sitting on God knows how many carried assets. You don't want to discuss. You're not going to hire philosophers to work in the Department of Treasury because they could start talking like this. So you have to be have to have your blaster ready. When economist talks about supply and demand, like Han Solo, you've reached for your blaster. It's not about supply. Supply and demand's got nothing to do with the way that Australian housing sector works. It's got something to do with the way New Zealand works and Canada works, but they don't run a carry trade. When a politician talks about housing supply, you reach for your blaster. Why? Because it's got nothing to do with supply. You've told me house prices are going to go up, so what's the point of building more? They're just going to become more and more unaffordable. It's not about supply. It's ridiculous. When a journalist, I don't want to get ahead of myself, when a journalist starts talking about Canada, well, we've got to do what they did in New Zealand. You reach for your blaster. They don't run a carry trade in New Zealand or Canada. Canada is a Ferrari. New Zealand is a Red Bull. You can't use Ferrari parts in a McLaren. You reach for your blaster. When a pundit talks about reducing immigration, they're not. They're special sauce for reducing volatility. The carry trade functions just fine without them. And when house prices go down, they'll bring them back, and they'll shoot down a lot of X-wings. If you're talking about immigration reducing demand, you're flying over dangerous territory that's really heavily defended. Yes, you need to reduce immigration, but don't waste X-wings. You're going to lose a lot of pilots that way. When an expert talks about rezoning, this is my favorite. They'll try and obscure, don't listen to John and him tell you about how it works. Rezone, NIMBYs, red tape, more tradies. It's all just supply. It's more supply. Well, if we rezone, we get more supply. NIMBYs, oh, that's more supply. Red tape tradies. I had one guy talk about decentralization last night or the night before. I thought, what are you talking about? Decentralization? It's got nothing to do with it. Anyway. When the legacy media talks about housing investors, mum and dad investors and investment, they don't exist. I've shown you that. We've seen that. They're not mum and dad investors. I would love to have more of them. Unfortunately, we don't have them. We need to give the carry traders an opportunity to become mum and dad investors. So unfortunately, we don't have any. Because it's a carry trade, and reform must affect either leverage, spread, volatility, or carry. And unless you do that, nothing's going to work. So you don't need me to bang on about this any more than I have already. It's all in the book. It's all in the book. It's an academic book. You'll only get it in libraries. The printing press broke down and they can't send it to anybody, and it's all a big mess. So I can't control that, but it's there. It's in the university libraries, and the carry trades, this book is about how this was built and who's responsible for it. So I could probably do additional presentations on how this was built, on how incompetence, mistakes, and incompetence led to this. Because I don't think Albanese took it off deliberately. I just think he doesn't understand how it works because he's surrounded by economists who don't look at the world this way. Who don't. This is why that you know. This is why you've never heard of Bill Mitchell, because he looks at the world completely. He asks, "How does currency work?" They don't want that. Once you start looking at how things work, you think of how they might change. And this one, you really need to get on top of, because it is a Death Star and it will blow up eventually. When someone notices the capital imbalance, when someone sees that for some strange reason the Commonwealth Bank is in the top five of market cap of all banks in the world and is very profitable, and Australia is a country of 26 million people and maybe it's got 16 million customers, Commonwealth Bank. That's when they'll start shorting the Commonwealth Bank. But then, look, I'm a philosopher. That's not my area. This is what the economists should be doing. They should be looking at, they should be asking questions within this frame. And that's, that's all I've got to say about that, Martin.
Well,
Yeah.
John,
So look, so I've banged on, but this is the first time I've ever spoken to anybody about the book. Because everybody's busy.
well, I have the sort of the parable of the emperor has no clothes in the back of my mind here, right? Because what you're doing, and being a philosopher myself, I love doing it, is I'm a asking the question, but how does it really work? What's really going on here, right? And kudos for you for actually shining a spotlight and a way of thinking that blows a massive hole, a massive hole, right, in the way that the mainstream media, the politicians, the banks, and everybody, the economists, have been talking about this. But you explain marvelously well about why we've got to the hole we've got to. Right? Because everybody knows it's broken. Everybody knows it's not sustainable the way it is. But nobody actually understands the, but why? But why is it like this? Right? And so I think this is a very, very important conversation that that we're having. And your presentation, I think, should go far and wide. We'll certainly do all we can to spread the word, because
It's
this is
I don't enjoy
critical. This is
I don't
critical.
enjoy this. I didn't, I don't this is not something I enjoy. I gave up Tipping Point for this, and they usually win the jackpot on Friday night, and it sets up my whole weekend. It shouldn't be up to it shouldn't be up to people like me to it shouldn't be up, well, look, well, I suppose it is philosophers. But when someone says, oh, what's the good of doing philosophy? Well, I can spot a carry trade when I see one. How about you? So don't, for young humanities graduates out there, don't let them try and convince you that doing something in the humanities isn't valuable. Because this, if I wasn't trained the way I was trained, if I didn't go to Braithwaite's program at the ANU, I got a lot of confidence working with those guys. Brilliant school, the ANU. I wouldn't have gone down this this path. So yeah, it's not something I enjoy doing.
Well, philosophy, the queen of science, as somebody once said, right? Because it frees you to think differently, and that's the whole point about philosophy. That's why I love my time doing philosophy, and why I still do it, because it makes you ask the next question, the why question. But why? But why? But why? And that's what you've been doing. So, and that's what this conversation has been about. And folks, this is a really, really important conversation. So come and join the X-Wing. We've got the job to
Get
do.
in an X, get in, get the immigrants. It put the immigrants in an X-wing as well, because they're being used. So everybody gets in their X-wing, but we need squadron leaders. I'm not as good as those other guys. I can't, they make really good videos, and they're, I'm a bit of a one-trick pony, really.
Well,
Squadron
don't
leaders.
do yourself down. I think it's been a very powerful conversation, and congratulations on the slides. I think that probably will have helped more people grasp the concept. But your message is frighteningly clear, and as we said at the start of the show, this is critical because, well, the future of Australia depends on it.
Yeah, it does. It does. The Commonwealth's on the line. But we need reports from those economists. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm wrong. But we need to know that. So, economists, proceed.
John, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed your conversation with me and your
No
presentation.
worries. Pleasure.
And we'll I'm sure pick up the conversation and the bat again, because this is a really important conversation. Thank you.
All right. No worries. All right. I'll catch you later then, Martin.
Take care. Bye-bye.